människor.
Modiga människor.
Modiga människor.
Hello and welcome to Modiga Människor, episode 182. And Modiga Människor means in English brave people. And in the beginning here also you heard some voices of children, and that's my children. And yeah, I'm just been thinking about why am I doing this? And it is for them actually. Because my heart is with them and for all the other children out there. And this is why this interview especially is so important, and why Kristina Turner are doing it in English now this time. So Kristina Turner, she's a birthright activist. And we know each other from actually in spring to 2016. We met each other at this occupation by the BB Sofia, which is a birth hospital. And that was an amazing experience. And now I want to introduce her. So hello, Kristina Turner.
Hello, Soya. So good to see you again. Thank you for having me on.
The same to you. You are amazing. And you are such an amazing activist. And if you're doing something activistic, I want to do it with you. You're fantastic. And today the subject is transgender. And I want to hear your story about when you first came in contact with this trans agenda in your personal life.
Okay, well, all my life I've known about people who don't want to conform to the gender stereotypes, who men who want to wear dresses or women who want to be butch and capable, maybe we have short hair and wear trousers. But something changed around the year 2015, 2016, 2017. And I noticed it because of my work in birth activism. Like you said, I know you because we both stand up for women's rights in childbirth and are activists against obstetric violence and choice for women when they're pregnant and give birth. And what I noticed around that period, around 2016-17, was that the language in Swedish, is where I noticed it first, started to creep away from using the word woman when speaking about pregnancy and childbirth, and the word birthing person started to be used in Swedish. In Swedish, it's a little bit more surreptitious because it doesn't sound quite as artificial as birthing person in English. It's a bit clunkier in English, so I think more people react to that word. In Swedish, födande doesn't sound quite as bad, if I put it that way. So I just noticed that lots of people were talking about this birthing person instead of using the word woman, and I just thought, oh well, I better sort of keep up with the times and speak like the young people speak, because otherwise they're going to think I'm an old, you know, an old lady who doesn't understand what's happening in feminism and so on. So I kind of adopted it in my work as a writer of articles on childbirth activism and midwives' rights as well. But it started to feel uncomfortable. And I didn't really listen to my own inner, you know, warning bells because I just wanted to fit in. So I kept using it. And then I felt the doors gradually getting tighter and tighter and tighter, where the word woman was disappearing from more and more contexts where I was reading about mothers. The word mother was disappearing. The word woman was disappearing. And it was just supposed to be this gender neutral language that I started to experience as oppressive. And actually, I stopped doing some of my writing as a birth activist because I wasn't willing to compromise on this. I insisted on using the word mother and woman because I could feel how, to me personally, those words are extremely valuable and powerful. And just talking about birthing people, I experienced it as dehumanizing, just on a personal level, but I didn't have the terminology or the background to really explain to myself or to other people why I was feeling the way I was. But it got me curious. And that's when I started sort of Googling and investigating and reading and looking for other midwives. I'm not a midwife myself, but I have lots and lots of midwife friends all over the world. I started looking for other midwives who were experiencing the same thing. And we started talking to each other. And that's how my eyes were opened to this institutional capture that's happened worldwide of the trans rights activist agenda, which is something quite different from the relatively few individuals who experience genuine gender dysphoria, or transsexuals, adult transsexuals, who actually do feel better from having corrective surgical removal of their sex organs. That makes them feel better. They're adults. But the trans rights activist agenda has got many, many more people associated with it than the people they are supposedly trying to protect, because it's become like a political, financially motivated activist field with its own agenda and its own dynamic and its own momentum forward. So I started to distinguish between the obvious compassion and empathy that you feel for people who don't feel at home in their bodies, who feel dissociated from their bodies for whatever reason, who are suffering in puberty or as adults because maybe their sexual orientation doesn't conform with societal norms. And treating those individuals with respect, start separating out the legal agenda that is trying to change society's definition of biological sex and what actually lies behind that. The motivations that lie behind that are very different from the needs of these people who are suffering, especially young people, like you're saying, children and young adults suffering from gender dysphoria. So it's taken me quite a while to, you know, to clarify all this in my head, because it's such a confusing topic, and opinions are so strong. And it's also very frightening, because once you speak up, you are likely to be silenced with invectives such as you're a TERF, a trans exclusionary radical feminist, you're transphobic, which makes it sound like you're the same as homophobic. But it's actually very, very different things. And these slurs, the very aggressive slurs, are used basically to silence women. So TERF, trans exclusionary radical feminist, has become the new acceptable slur to use against women who speak up and say, we don't want to lose words such as woman and mother. And we see a conflict of interest between women's sex-based rights and self-ID, on the other hand. So women's sex-based rights they're anchored in the biology of women. Women's rights that have developed over hundreds of years in terms of ownership, voting, separate sex spaces such as changing rooms and our own toilets, they're rooted in our biology. The fact that males have a much greater muscle mass and are much more prone to commit certain types of crimes, such as sex-based crimes. That is the origin of our sex-based spaces. Now, if you conflate sex and gender identity, we lose the right to those sex-based spaces. So I think it's really important that we clarify straight away that distinction, that your gender identity, this new modality by which legislation is being imposed on all of us, gender identity is a feeling, whatever feeling you have inside of yourself. So if I were to say, I feel like a man, if we have self-ID, that then also means that I am a man and I have the same rights as all men. And likewise, if a male person, I with a beard and a penis and so on, says, I feel like a woman, they then have the rights associated with the female sex, i.e. that man, based on self-ID, can then enter women's spaces such as changing rooms, toilets, lesbian organizations, and doesn't have to change anything about their biology, but has the same rights as any woman. If trans women truly are women, that is where we are at. So women's rights are in conflict with the transgender rights agenda's arguments. And if you try and race this, you will be silenced as a TERF or a transphobe. And this is, it's frightening. And I think it's particularly clear to the women that have been doing this, that the energy that's silencing them is this male oppressive, abusive energy, because those of us who have experienced it, we recognize it. And that's what J.K. Rowling has been saying, you know, about women's shelters and so on. It's this very aggressive shutdown, and, you know, like almost a physical violence associated with it. And it makes it very hard for women to stand up. And because we've also been trained to be accommodating, make space for other people, include everyone. That's how we brought up as women. That's what we do. Oh, it doesn't matter. I'll just step aside and let these people come in. They're also women. But what we don't realize is that this movement has been going for, well, since the early 2000s, not just in social transition, but in actually changing the legal system and the rules and regulations that govern our institutions and public bodies. It's been a very concerted campaign to conflate this gender identity, the inner feeling of what you are, with biological sex. Now, as a birth activist who's worked with women's rights and childbirth for 15 years, there is no doubt whatsoever, if reproduction in any mammal it's going to work, you need two types of sex cell, gametes. We are dimorphic. That means there are two sex cells. There's sperm, the little ones, and there's eggs, the big ones. And that is what allows us to blend our chromosomes and give rise to a new human being. So sex, that definition of sex, the biological definition of sex is absolutely 100% binary. Now, the argument will be, well, there's a spectrum. It's not everyone is, Ken, and not everyone is Barbie. There's a whole spectrum in between. But that's got nothing to do with actual sex. English is a better language than Swedish, because in English, at least you have the words male and female, not just man and woman. Because, okay, so a trans woman, i.e. a biological male who has like long hair, wears makeup, likes to wear dresses, is still biologically a male, even if he or she, you know, depending on how you want to address them, or they want to be addressed, which should always be respected, removes their penis and takes cross-sex hormones to stop their beard from coming through and has surgery to develop breasts, that's still a male. They're still producing the small gametes. You can castrate someone and remove the organs that produce the gametes, but it doesn't change that they're male. You can add the hormones, the cross-sex hormones, so that they develop some of the secondary sex characteristics, such as I said, you know, less beard growth, for example, and and more body fat in the case of a trans woman. Or as we are seeing now with a whole generation of young women who are taking cross-sex hormones the other way. So they're taking male sex hormones, testosterone, to develop male secondary characteristics, such as a beard, loosening their hair, deepening of the voice, you know, all this stuff that we associate with males. Those are secondary sex characteristics, but it does not change the fact that their ovaries produce eggs. And that is what the definition of female and male is. And the words we've used socially up until now to represent this is man and woman. And what is coming now with this transgender, or rather I'd say trans rights activism agenda, is that trans women are women. And that is the main argument. It's not so much that trans men are men. This is essentially, I'm just going to be very honest, this is a men's rights movement, because it's the money, the power, the whole legal argument that has led us to where we are now is basically run by men who wish to be women, or men who have huge investments in the pharmacological industry or the biomedical complex and stand to benefit financially from a whole generation of youths growing up being dependent on cross-sex hormones and surgeries. So can I just clarify that I'm not anti-men, because it makes it sound like it. When I'm saying all this, it makes it sound like it. I'm not. I love men. I adore men. And patriarchal structures harm men just as much as they harm women. But in order to see through this, all these smoke screens, we need to be really clear and honest about it. And there is basically this whole transhumanist agenda behind it as well, which comes from the US and Silicon Valley. You know, technology has developed so quickly that us humans with our human biology have not been able to keep up with it. And we can have surgeries to replace one organ with another, take these cross-sex hormones and change our systems and our biology. And it's not necessarily a good thing, but there's a huge amount of money involved in it. It's a multiple billion-dollar industry globally to medicalize adults and children and make them dependent on these hormones and surgeries. And I think it's very important to try and be aware of the bigger picture and how this transhumanist agenda, i.e. our ability to go beyond the biological lifespan of humans, the biological limitations of what it means to be humans, in a direction towards disembodiment and dissociation from our bodies, and how that this is harming a whole generation, you know, generation of children that are addicted to their screens, watching TikTok, whatever they're watching, and getting all these adverts targeted based on their interests, algorithms, their morbidities, i.e., for example, such as autism or maybe being same-sex attracted. They will then get, the algorithms will draw in the content that affirms a worldview that becomes narrower and narrower and narrower until you feel like the only viable option is to, if you're a young autistic lesbian girl, to remove your breasts and take testosterone, because then you'll feel fine, because that's what the algorithms are telling you. And there's loads of money to be made out of this. So I've babbled on now.
Yeah, but I mean, this cross hormones, I mean, how good can it be for I mean, like anyone, but especially to a young person, like a teenager who is still growing?
The answer is we don't know. This is largely experimental, and that's why it's been banned now in many countries, including Sweden. It hasn't actually been banned in practice, but it's been significantly reduced because there is just no good evidence to show what it does. And, you know, the argument for a long time was that puberty blockers, i.e. medications that stop someone from going into puberty, the argument was that that's an entirely reversible process. So a young, say, 11 or 12 year old who feels they are born in the wrong body, because this is what you're being sold by social media and the narrative, even schools that are captured, has then been offered to be put on puberty blockers to stop puberty, to give them time to think, to see if they are going to, if they really want to go on cross-sex hormones or not. But the fact is that in practice, if you put someone on puberty blockers, 98% of those kids will go on to take cross-sex hormones, and that will render them sterile, because it starts messing with your whole system and you don't go through puberty normally. So we're basically sterilizing a generation of kids. And this is something that's really quite interesting. So in practice, although the argument, as I said, is that puberty blockers are just time to think, it doesn't hurt anyone. But in practice, 98% go on to take cross-sex hormones. Whereas if you leave kids alone or give them talking therapies during these very difficult teenage years, when you're going through puberty and maybe you're finding that you're lesbian or gay or whatever, and you don't fit in with society's gender norms, you don't want to be like a Barbie doll or whatever. If you give people support during that period, the vast majority, about 80% of them, then grow out of their gender dysphoria and live happy adult lives as proud gays, proud lesbians, or just straight people who went through a period of some confusion during puberty. But we are basically, like I said, sterilizing children and pushing them into surgery and dependence on hormones. And I'm not okay with this as a woman and a mother.
Me neither. I think it's horrifying. I mean, it's just you playing with people's life. And then we actually, I was thinking of taking this later, but this... because there's a lot of people who actually realized that it didn't feel good, and then they want to come back to the context of they realized, okay, I did a mistake, I did this transition, and then when they are trying to come back, they are being excluded from the context.
Yes, absolutely, because there is an element to this which is quite cultish and evangelical. So if you don't toe the line and say that everyone who is trans and that's it, no debate, the hashtag is no debate, then you are considered to be against it. So what you're describing is detransitioners. So these are people who transitioned maybe socially, i.e. socially means like if you're a man wearing dresses and growing your hair long and wearing makeup, or they maybe transitioned hormonally, so you're taking cross-sex hormones, or maybe even surgically. So there are many examples I've met, a few as well, of like women who as teenagers, basically lesbians, maybe on the autistic spectrum, maybe not, who didn't buy into the whole gender stereotype roles and had also grown up, as another generation of children are doing now, growing up on porn, which is very abusive towards women, you know, with the strangulation and anal sex and all this stuff that young people are exposed to now. Think, well, if that's what it means to be a woman, I'm not a bloody woman, I'm a man. So, you know, I'm thinking of one particular girl who had her breasts removed, took cross-sex hormones so that she developed facial hair and started to lose her hair, and her voice deepened. And then, so this was maybe at age 18, something like that, and then at age 23 realized that, flip, this hasn't actually made me any happier. It's not my body that's the problem. It's society's expectations and what I'm being told that's the problem. And then you start detransition. So you stop taking the cross-sex hormones, but you're left with a body where you can't breastfeed. Your breasts have been removed. You know, you've got these permanent changes to your physiology. And I feel that we as a society are effectively enabling self-harm. You know, we would never treat someone with anorexia or an eating disorder in this way by affirming them in their body dysmorphia, saying like, yeah, you are really fat. You're definitely really fat. Don't eat. Stop eating. You know, it's a serious thing that's happening. So detransitioners are then excluded from their own communities because the lesbian and gay communities that organizations like Stonewall and other international organizations in Sweden's RFSL, RFSU, did so much to support the integration of gay people of both sexes into the world and for their rights to be respected all over. I would say that these organizations that are supposed to stand up for gays and lesbians' rights have been captured by the trans agenda, which really has nothing to do with sexual orientation. You know, homosexuality is based on dimorphism, that you're attracted to the same sex. And these organizations are supporting these children who want to transition socially and medically and biologically and surgically, and then abandoning them when they realize that the body wasn't the problem because it challenges the whole agenda. So that's why women like this young woman I'm describing now are then excluded from the queer communities that are supposed to, that have encouraged them to have these surgeries, to take these medicines, and encouraged them to think along these lines, that you'll feel much better if you do this. And then when they realize that the body was not the problem, they are then excluded from those contexts, and they are no longer, you know, very hard to fit into the world. And, you know, what I've been told is actually like, I wish I would have met more TERFs earlier on. Not, I think it's quite funny because, you know, although TERF is a slur, it's feminists who understand that our sex-based rights are associated with our biology, and the fact that we are oppressed as a class, women, is because of our reproductive capacities and our biology. So to dismiss us all as TERFs is a very good way of just using, you know, a slur like bitch or whore or other four-letter words that are no longer socially acceptable.
But what you are describing, Kristina, it sounds, I mean, what's the difference of what you just prescribed before? Like when you feel that this is not right, or RFSL who should stötta dig,
support you.
I can't see any difference between that or a cult.
No, absolutely. And this is a problem. And more people are saying this, especially the detransitioners.
Because you should welcome, because if you just realize, okay, this was wrong for me, then yeah, they should welcome you and say, oh, that's good that you realized that. That's what I mean. For me, it's really, really weird, all this.
It is. To me, I mean, me personally, this is just my personal perspective, but to me, this looks like a sort of millennial mass hysteria or a millennial cult, which is something that's happened historically, periodically, around the change of a millennium with all the energetic changes. There's some sort of worldwide or societal collective illusion that captures a large amount of people. And that's what this really looks like to me. It looks like a millennial cult because the fervency, it's such fervent, evangelical, fiery preaching. And like you say, this real tunnel belief, and that no discussion is allowed, and the faith that you have this gendered soul that only you can see and only you can know, and biology is irrelevant. So it really is a religious belief. That's how it comes across to me.
And then we're doing it the other way around because you didn't get a proper introduction in the beginning. And now you have a long history, Christina, of this birthright activism. You have been at least three books, or is it?
It's two books and a number of articles is what I've written. Yeah.
You've been in this for a long, long time, and you have like a long history of really standing up for what you believe is right. And when I'm listening to you, I mean, it's like you are kind of in the same field. You are fighting for what you believe, and you are being like, hounded. Yeah. For what you are believing and what you're fighting for. And now we're in this one, this trans agenda, and the same thing is happening here. So it's like the same history. The history is repeating itself.
It is. It's and this is the moment of horror that I realized about 2019. Yeah, 2018, 2019. I just realized, because after Me Too, I was really hopeful. Everyone, all women were suddenly like feminists, saying we've had enough of this bullshit. I really was hopeful that obstetric violence and abuse of women during pregnancy and birth was finally going to be addressed. Those of us that have worked in this field have been banging our heads bloody against the brick wall for decades, trying to alert society to the abusive conditions that women are exposed to in childbirth. I was really hopeful after Me Too that now is the moment. And then there was this massive backlash where you suddenly couldn't talk about women and mothers anymore. And it happened so quickly. Within a year, the whole birth world was captured, and doulas and the NHS and all these support organizations around women suddenly started calling you transphobe if you're talking about women or mothers, and therefore made it impossible to talk about women's rights in childbirth. And that was a very, very distressing point for me. And I took a year out, actually, around all this to recover. I mean, I had my tires slashed in Sweden after writing a couple of articles in one of Sweden's dailies about what I'm just describing to you now, and the fact that the Swedish National Health had instructions to remove the word woman from its advice relating to childbirth. You know, so you're supposed to replace the word woman with things like womb carrier or menstruator or parent. But this has health consequences for women, especially in the third world, which is why I find it so, you know, enragingly frustrating. Because it's not the same to say that a parent and the child need to stay together for the golden hour after birth. It's the mother, it's the female, it's the breastfeeding. And to say that a biological male has the right to induce lactation because a trans woman is a woman. And so I'll describe now what I'm talking about. So for example, breastfeeding support organizations are now encouraged to move away from the sex-based language, talking about women and mothers, and using these so-called inclusive terms, and also to accept biological males who have become parents, either via surrogacy or through a partner of the opposite sex. Biological males can take a medication called domperidone to induce lactation, and so they can feed the baby. It's never going to be adequate. It's not going to be adequate amount of breast milk. We don't know how the cross-sex hormones that pass through the breast milk are going to affect the baby, and the baby is not getting the same nurture as it would from the biological mother. And this is in the name of gender inclusion. Now, my question is, what is the child's rights in this? The child has no rights in this. This is about affirming the adult in their gender identity, this belief about of a gendered soul. And this is a, I think, a societal ethical problem that is quite serious.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and I mean, you're reducing women to body parts, and then did you talk about the babies, the children's right? I mean, I have a friend who got depressed while she was breastfeeding, and she had a small dose of antidepressive, yeah, and the baby fell into coma, yeah, and got very, very ill by it.
Yeah, you mean so it passes through the breast?
Yeah, milk. Yeah, exactly. Through the breast. I mean, yeah.
We don't know how the cross-sex hormones and how domperidone, if it's used to that degree, to induce lactation in a.
So why should we play with another human being? Because the child is, I mean, this is it's insane. For me, it's insane.
That's because there's so much power and money behind this movement. And like what I said about how it's gone through changing legal structures and decision-making structures to just present society as a whole with a fait accompli and to avoid debate, to intentionally avoid debate for 20 years so that we're just all presented with, well, this is the way it is now. Because the laws have already been put into place. That's why in the UK, over 850 organizations have removed the word mother from their documentation, including companies, public corporations. The NHS are largely captured. Schools are increasingly teaching children that sex is a spectrum and not binary, and that you can choose your sex. And schools are being encouraged to not communicate to parents how their child may socially transition in school. So, I mean, I think you experienced this with your own daughter, that your daughter was asked, do you feel like a boy or a girl? And, you know, if schools are then encouraged to not communicate that to parents, they're told this is like, you know, this is private. So you help the school to the child to socially transition in school without informing the parent. And then in the United States as well, cross-sex hormones are viewed in a similar manner in some states to contraceptives. So the parents have nothing to do with that either. You know, in the same way that your child can be given contraceptives from age 15 or 16 or whatever, they can be given cross-sex hormones without your knowledge. So it's happened behind our backs, and that's what's so concerning about it, because it's already been enshrined into law in many countries and states. This self-ID basically mean that you decide yourself what sex you are. So, you know, if I say I'm a man and I have all the rights associated with being a man, but that's rarely a problem. It's rarely a problem when it's a woman who wants to be a man. It's when men want to be in women and get into women's spaces, such as prisons, rape crisis, shelters, single sex, changing rooms, and so on. What I said earlier, this is essentially a male's rights movement, a men's rights movement. So in prisons, for example, in female prisons where there are many vulnerable women who may have been raped or abused by men, males in America, in Scotland, in many parts of the developed world can now say, well, I identify as a female, so I want to go to the female wing of the prison. And there have been incidents of rape and sexual abuse in those female prisons by male inmates who say that they are female. You have to understand that this is very different from the young women who say they feel like they're a boy. You see what I mean? It's such a complex and broad issue that it's quite hard to get an intellectual handle on all the different aspects of it. And I haven't even spoken to you yet about autogynephilia, which is males who basically get off of wearing women's clothes, and what that means for example, you know, if you claim you're a woman, but actually what's happening is you get off on wearing women's clothes. So it's a sexual paraphilia, something that makes you turned on, basically. And you then claim you have reproductive rights like everyone else, i.e. the right to have a child by a surrogate mother or whatever. It causes all sorts of ethical issues in terms of children's rights. So I've tried to summarize it as best I can. I'm not sure how clear I've been, but I can really recommend that you read, if you're interested in this field, read Helen Joyce's book, Trans. That summarizes it beautifully, and all the financial and technological incentives behind this movement and how it's been done. And I can also, if you're a midwife or a birth worker, I recommend that you follow withwoman.org. That's with-woman.org. Follow them on Twitter or X or whatever it's called now, because they're raising all the issues in healthcare and maternity services in the birth world that are arising as a result of this. So those are the main recommendations I'd make. There are lots of other good books as well. I can write them in the comments section under your YouTube video.
Yeah. But I just have this, it's not a question. Yeah, but it is in a way, because you described this before about the teenagers in school. And that makes me think, and this has been a question for me in other interviews, is your child really your child if you're not allowed in and things are happening behind the scenes? And for me, that's really scary.
Yeah. I'm just very glad I haven't got young children at the moment. Hopefully, fingers crossed, I'll have grandchildren eventually. I will just try and educate them clearly at home about sex, how reproduction works.
Yeah. And I think,
you know, the sexual orientation is none of my business. Have sex with whoever you like, dress however you like, behave however you like, wear your hair however you like, wear makeup, nail varnish, whatever you want. But reproduction is dimorphic, and it has health consequences if we pretend that it's not.
Yeah, I think that's very dangerous. I just want to include the fact that you actually moved back to England, and one of the decisions was that it became very, you had this conflict in this
area.
I'm still thinking in Swedish. Yeah. And there is a lot of, it's quite a big difference in living in Sweden and living in England. Can you just tell us about that?
Well, Sweden is an extremely well-organized, well-run, or has been anyway, society where women are very equal in a material sense, i.e. they all work. And financially, they are much more equal, perhaps, than other countries, England. But it's also a very conformist society where it's much more uncomfortable to have different views to the majority of people. Now, what we call political correctness is an art form in Sweden. We're just constantly reading what is the correct view to have, what is the correct opinion to have. And if you don't have that opinion, and especially if you're outspoken, you are going to get a lot of flack in Sweden. And I did find it oppressive in the end. Yes, I did. I found it hard because also I found that there were many, many Swedish people who agreed with me, both in terms of my childbirth activism and on this question as well of the trans rights activist agenda. But they kind of want to push you to the front of the stage. You go out on the stage and you say it, because I can't say it because I lose my job. I can't say it because I lose my friends. So you do it. And that became a bit onerous for me in the end. I didn't want to be the, I mean, I wasn't the only person. There were other people too. But I think the few of us that were outspoken about this felt particularly hit upon. You know, you take all the flack on your own. I got letters sent to my personal address. I got abuse on social media just for saying what I've been saying today. Well, actually saying much less than what I've been saying today. England is a more tolerant, individualistic society. There is no doubt about it, where eccentricity is celebrated and spirituality is not something to be feared. And I just feel more comfortable here. There's more people. There's so many more people. That's one thing. So you just can't have, you know, such a collective consensus that it becomes oppressive. We have to tolerate more diversity and variety. And one of the things that have been said about England in the trans rights activist context is that it's turf island, because here women actually stand up for their rights. You know, JK Rowling is one of the most outspoken in the world. All she said was that menstruators, didn't we have used to have a word for that? What was it? Women? What was it? That's all she said. And all the hate that's been piled on her and death threats and God knows what. But you know that we need to stand up for our words. They're an extremely important part of my identity, woman and mother. Those words matter. The word mother, mummy, mama, it's not actually even my word. It's the baby's word. It's the first sound the baby makes when it's put to my breasts and starts feeding from the beautiful nutrients that my body, my biological body, my sexed body is producing. The baby starts making the words, mama, mama, mama. That's why we are mothers. We must stand up for our words, our language, and for children.
Now you're making me cry. Yeah. So. Yeah, man. I mean, you can't take that away. I mean, since I have kids, and that's so okay for me. My breast became, I mean, something else, and the love from my children, and the look from their eyes when, I mean, my youngest son, he's 4, and he's I'm not breastfeeding him anymore, but he still love my breasts.
Yeah.
In a way that has nothing to do with something sexual. No. And I mean, just the look of his, from his eyes. And I mean, I am a woman. Yeah. And I'm going to fight for that right. And I'm a mother. Yeah. And like I said in the beginning, every time I hear the jingle and the sound from my children, and I mean, this is so important. This is so important.
And if we accept the suffix cis woman, we are creating a new binary, trans and cis. And if we accept the cis suffix, we are making ourselves a subcategory of woman. So it's very important to be aware of the linguistic changes that are being introduced surreptitiously and the legal ramifications that they have. And this is the biggest threat to women's rights that I have seen during my lifetime. And I know that more and more women are waking up to it. And I hope that maybe my words can provide some clarity and point in some directions to find out more and draw your own conclusions about this important topic.
Yeah. And thank you so much, Christina, for doing this. I feel so grateful.
Thank you, Soya. Thank you for providing a platform for brave people, and long may it flourish.
Thank you.